You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Tigers on Tap, a Go Tigers 247 audio podcast. Stepping up to the microphone are Trey Leslie and TJ Willis. Join the guys as they talk all things Memphis Tigers and their favorite beer. Turn your volume up, grab your favorite brew, and enjoy the conversation. Now, let's get to the show.
What's up, Tiger fam? We're back. A tough one. On Friday, it's Trey. I'm back with Mr. This Is Impossible, TJ. How you holding up after that horrible loss on Friday?
I'm in a bit of a gray area on how to feel. I think, obviously, the loss after having the 99% chance to win is...
Hey, 99.9. Houston at one point had 0.01 chance to win that game. You play that game 1,000 times, that's the only one they win. It's like when Doctor Strange in Avengers goes through all the scenarios in which the Avengers can win and there's only one possibility. That's what we just saw on Friday.
It's kind of what it felt like.
I think I'm still covered in vomit from just constantly throwing up after that. All right, let's talk about the beer before I get sick again. Tell me what we got tonight, Teej.
This is
our third Oktoberfest edition.
Yeah, we got Ghost River Oktoberfest. This is a Marzen Ale, whatever the hell that means. Not sure I really know. Oh, yeah. Pops.
Don't love the can.
No, the can's weird, man.
It gives me a little bit of like... English Premier League uniform vibes, you know what I mean? There's like the crest on there, and then you got the checker. It's kind of like a soccer team jersey, almost.
Yeah. Well, it's not getting to the can just yet, but it is definitely weird.
Definitely not the best I've seen. All right, well, let's jump into this game. I really don't want to relive it. I mean, I'm too emotionally invested into Tiger Athletics. It's probably horrible for my health. I've avoided, until today, we're at Tuesday. I've avoided everything Tiger football related until a little while ago when we started digging into this recap and looking ahead to ECU. And I'll just tell you, I couldn't go to sleep on Friday. That's how upset / just disappointed and angry I was at what happened.
I couldn't go to sleep mostly because I was up fighting with people on the boards, I think, the entire time, but it's a little different reason.
Oh, yeah. You, big Ryan Silverfield fan club guy.
Not even a fan club. I'm just not anti-Ryan. I'm not finding any excuse to get rid of the guy.
Call it what you will. I'm not here to argue with you. All right, so the game. Hey, for three quarters and, I don't know, let's call it 11 minutes, we were on top of the world. Looked great. I was having the time of my life, a great Friday night football game. We were going to send the Cougs out of here with an L. And then the last 4 minutes of that game, our worlds got flip turned upside down. and the improbable happened. I mean, there's so many different scenarios of just a play here or there or anything that could have occurred that game was over and we win. And literally every single thing that had to go right for Houston went right for Houston. It was unbelievable.
So for you, where did it go wrong? Like, what was the play? Or was it just one play? Was it a sequence of plays? Like, what was it?
The one that I continue to go back to, and this was at, if you look at the, if you look at the FPI prediction, and we had 99.9%, this is the one play where this game should have been over. It was 4th and 11 from their own 25, a little over 3 minutes left in the game. Houston has one timeout and we are up 32-19. So you're up two scores. They 3 minutes. It's 4th and 11. Cam's got a hand on Tune. He's got him sacked, but he's getting blocked. So Tune kind of gets out of it. That's fine. He's still got 15 yards. He's got to go. Up runs Sincere Evans. Meets him in the backfield. Could still be a sack. Sincere leaves his feet for some reason. Jumps in the air like he's batting a pass down. Tune wasn't throwing the ball. Tune runs around him. That's okay. Here comes Jalen Allen. He's still got 8 yards to go. Jalen dives at the ankles. Tune sidesteps him. Well, that's okay because here comes Zay. Zay's going to tackle him 3 yards short. Nope. Zay dives at the ankles. Tune gets the first down. If any one of the four of those guys brings Tune down, the game is over. We win by two scores. We're 3-0, and we are sitting at a totally different – I mean, we are – this is a totally different vibe tonight than it is. That one play right there is the one that – there were several after that. They end up completing another 4th and 9 conversion on that same drive. The play right before that on 3rd and 9 – the ball got kind of tipped in the air and Hastings had a pick in his hands and drops it. So if that happens, it's over. I mean, there's a number of them, but the first one was that 4th and 11 from their own 25. If you just bring Tune down in those 15 yards of area, four guys had a chance, it's over.
Yeah, I think I agree. That play was quite frustrating. I think it was Sincere when he left his feet. Just, you heard everybody just say, oh, like everyone knew because that's an extra 5 yards guaranteed. So, I think that's where things started to sour on me. You know, I'm not one who thinks it came down to the weird timeouts. I think they're somewhat justified outside of that last one. I don't get that one with the clock stop, but whatever, I guess that comes.
I mean, at that point, the game's over anyway. Yeah. It was a dumbass timeout, but I mean, there were 11 seconds. Like the chances of us actually getting down the field and kicking a game winning field goal were slim to none. Like it shouldn't have been that point in time anyway. Like the timeouts, whatever, they happened. I mean, there were several opportunities. Players were in position to make a play and they didn't make the play. The game should have been over.
Yeah, I mean the kickoff return for touchdown, onside kick was frustrating. Yeah, the defense disappeared.
Yeah, I mean it was a number of things. So the onside kick was on. We sit down low, and they kicked it to our sideline, and we were kind of at a bad angle, so we couldn't really see it. But I texted you and a buddy of ours when they scored and were lining up, and I saw there was like a minute 15 left. I texted you guys both, and I said they're getting this onside kick. I mean, I think everybody in the stadium probably felt that, but like when they had scored and they're lining up, it was just a bad feeling. I knew that they were about to get the onside kick. Now, I don't know that I really felt like we were still going to lose. I just knew that they were going to get the onside kick and it was probably going to be like a scarier finish than it needed to be. And sure enough, we couldn't really see it from where we were sitting because they kicked to our sideline, but I watched it. I don't know why I did this, but I went back and watched the last 5 minutes of the game today. And I watched it. People keep bringing up the fair catch rule. You know, I think it happened in the Texas Tech Oklahoma State game, but the rule is if the ball on onside is kicked directly into the ground and takes a high bounce, you can fair catch it off of that bounce in the air. But the moment that it hits the ground again, that's dead. And what happened was Houston kicked it straight into the ground. It took kind of a low skip, hit the ground again, and then took a big bounce. Like we couldn't have called the fair. It wouldn't have been in play. But I'll tell you what's concerning to me is we had everybody like it seemed towards the hash and they kicked it straight to the sideline. And if you watch the broadcast, it's like all white jerseys over there. It seemed like we had nobody over there in position to even try to. I mean, I think Caden Priestcorn was over there, but he was like by himself. And so it hits the ground. It takes a high bounce. I think a Houston player kind of hits it and it goes a little higher in the air. And then one of their guys catches it on the backside by the sideline.
What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do?
I don't know. Bat the ball out of bounds. Do anything. Anything but let them get the ball and win the game when they shouldn't have. I'm so like, why are we doing this? I don't want to be talking about this. It's making me mad again.
All right, let's get it going. What's, if it's possible, at all possible, Trey, what is your good that you can take away from this game?
I mean, there was good. For 3.5 quarters, we looked good. We were on top of the world, right? Like, I feel like offensively, we opened it up.
Yeah.
A lot of creativity. You're running reverse. Gabe kind of stepped up as a playmaker, it seemed like. Freaking slinging 45-yard tutties in the air. Wild. On the run. Reverses. I mean, he was stepping up. So, for most of the game, I felt like offensively we looked good. There were probably a couple drives where you would prefer to finish out and get a touchdown, but I mean, good for me, I felt like, was offensively the play calling.
Yeah, I would agree. I really liked what they did by opening it up, spreading it out. You know, we've known that Kramsey really likes trick plays. I didn't think we were going to get all of them in one game, but you know, it, obviously the Gabe touchdown was bananas. I liked working in Ryan Glover on run plays. You know, I think the other team knows when he's coming in, he's going to run it. But, to your credit, I think you've said at goal line, like, why not bring him in? You know, if they're going to start sniffing on the run whenever he comes in, like, give him one carry and just let him see what he does. And on the second one, he's a willing passer as well. So there's some creativity there.
Yeah. Yeah, we had two drives. I'm not even talking, like, not the end of the game where we were running the clock and kicking. We had two where we got inside the 10, I think, to the 5, and we had to settle for like a 28-yard field goal. Like, we've seen Glover flat, like, just put him out there and read option it. Like, give him the option to try to, like, I don't know, just something to try to finish a drive off and get a touchdown as opposed to having to settle for a field goal. But yeah, that was my good. What do you have for bad?
I'm going to say for my bad, I bounce this around, and I'm not sure you can say anything other than special teams. And that's mostly because, you know, you allowed the kick return for a touchdown. You didn't run out your hands team on the first onside kick. You did recover that one, so it's fine. But they had to burn the timeout there, which is super frustrating. You know, especially since, you know, timeouts came, you know, down the pipeline. I think timeouts obviously became super important. You know, obviously a lot of people were very critical on Ryan on burning that timeout there. You gave up the second onside kick. And, you know, I think Ryan pointed this out, that Memphis is 122nd in the nation out of 130 teams in kickoff return yardage, allowing 26.3 yards per return, which breaks down to almost 100 kick yards a game. That is a lot. It's not good, Bob. You know, we've kind of praised on special teams the last couple of weeks with how good Joe Doyle has been, and you have Chris Howard who's knocking down field goals, and you know, the part that we struggled with last year has looked so much better this year, but it's still kind of a thorn in our side with the kick returns and just any of the onside kick, like literally all of it. It's so frustrating. It shouldn't be this difficult.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I feel like we don't have maybe the best guys on kick coverage as we, like, in years past, we've put a lot of our best just players on kickoff coverage, right? Like, Anthony Miller would be out there on kick coverage, like fast guys that are just playmakers. And I just don't know that it feels like we have, like, tried to identify special teams guys and put them out there. And I just don't know that I like that approach. But yeah, I would agree that the special teams, outside of field goal, because shout out to Chris Howard, he feels automatic. I've said that, and now he's probably going to have a kick blocked or miss an important kick Saturday. But Saturday, I mean, Friday for sure, the special teams was very costly. The bad for me, I've already talked about it a little bit, but, and I don't want it, like, I think the offense was great primarily. I mean, for the most part on Friday, we talked about the play calling, but because my ugly is going to be everything else, I just put down bad was like finishing drives off. Obviously we talked about it. You end up with four field goals. There were two, one where Glover breaks that run off. If he doesn't trip, it's a touchdown, and that's a difference in the game, right? So you end up inside the five and you have to kick a field goal. And then there was another one where we got a long run or pass, I think, to Gabe and got inside the 10 or five and ended up having to settle for another like 25-yard field goal. So just being able to finish those drives and get touchdowns as opposed to kicking field goals. I mean, I said it during the game, but that was more so of me like wanting us to run the score up and beat Houston's ass. Not like, hey, we need to be scoring touchdowns because this is going to cost us. I literally never once thought that we were actually going to lose that game. But for me, it would be finishing drives. We need to be better about getting those tutties as opposed to kicking field goals.
Yeah. I think everyone will agree with you, especially kind of looking back with hindsight. But, I mean, how many were there? How many drives do you have it pulled up in front of you by chance?
How many overall?
Well, how many that did not end in points, I guess, is how I should word this question.
So we started. We started scoring our first two drives, right? We got a 14-0.
Yeah.
Not ending in points. I mean, there were four that we ended up kicking field goals. And if just one of those is a touchdown.
Well, like there were two punts. And this is all going back to your good. I mean, I think we punted two times, maybe three. You had the fumble, which I'm glad I missed that. And then I think the rest were touchdowns or field goal. So we're good there, right? Is that so 13 drives and we scored on seven of them? It's not bad. Just the overall, you know. Scored on more than 50% of your drives. So, hard for me to complain about the scoring. I mean, you scored 32 points, you should probably win the game. Maybe just in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't put the loss on the offense at all. I think the offense did what it needed to do to win the game.
What,
all right.
What would you say is the ugly? Yeah, I got you first, dude.
I mean, it's freaking losing the game. It was hideous. The last 4 minutes all together combined the entirety of it. We went from being with 14 minutes left. Gabe throws that incredible double pass, right? Mm-hmm. It's a perfect dime to Asa back of the end zone, and you go up 19 at that point in time. And it is we're all over Twitter. We're like one of the only, I think Rutgers and Nebraska were playing at the same time, but like Twitter blew up. Memphis was on top of the college football world for being awesome and running that awesome play. And then within 30 minutes, we're back at the top of the college football world talking wise because we suck. And we just blew a 19-point lead in the first quarter or fourth quarter, which is the first time this season it's happened. Teams trailing by 19 or more in the fourth quarter were 0 for 128. So out here making history. But, I mean, just the way that game ended, man. Like, we've talked about it enough probably, but just so improbable. There's no reason that we should have lost that football game.
Yeah. No, I think you're spot on. You know, it wasn't the little things, right? You won the penalty battle, I guess, if you want to call it that. You only had three penalties. They had seven. Third down, you were great on defense on third down. You held them to under your average on the year. I think they were at like 37%. The Tigers themselves were greater than 50% from three. From three, it's a tray. on third down. I mean, you,
TJ's already got his mind on basketball.
I do. It was the Grizz game just ended.
Our basketball preview will be coming as we get closer to the season.
You won the red zone. You scored all five times you got in the red zone. You won the possession battle. It's so frustrating, right? You do all the little things just for it to all kind of crumble down at the end. But, you know, to the coaching staff's point, you know, it's all about execution. And I hate that I even say that it comes down to such a coach speak type of answer that, like, everything is a puzzle and all the little pieces have to fit together. It's just not going to work. And, you know, be it players, be it coaching staff, luck finds its way in there, of course. Just the pieces were not
so much
luck. Not going together. It was so improbable for them to win. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, there were 30 little things that had to go exactly right for them, and they all went exactly right. I don't even like those two long fourth downs. We talked about the onside kick. And I'm not blaming this because it shouldn't have even come to this anyway, but the go-ahead touchdown should have been offensive pass interference. The outside wide receiver comes inside, engages and blocks Ruben into the back of the end zone, leaving the pylon, the flats open, touchdown, free tutty. Like, you can't engage with the defender blocking-wise with the ball in the air. It should have been offensive. The exact same play happened in the Georgia Tech-Duke game. And Duke was going to score on it in overtime, and it was called back 15 yards. Duke ends up losing because their receiver engaged blocking a DB down the field. Like, yeah. I don't know. Just little stuff. And I'm not even saying that that's why. I'm just saying, like, from a perspective of
sure.
them being able to pull that off and it not being called had to go right, and it went right. Like, everything that needed to go right the last 5 minutes of that game for them went right.
Yeah. It is what it is. Let's move on. I'm tired of talking about it. Let's grow from this.
Sucks. I think
that's what we're supposed to say there, right?
We would have been freaking 5-1, 3-0, controlling our destiny. I mean, we still obviously can get to where we would like to be, but it just freaking sucks the way it happened. I would have rather Houston come in and blown us out than for that to have happened.
Yeah, and I will say a lot of people are hashtag all out right now after that loss because it was so gut-wrenching, but you have a lot of season left in front of you, right? We're only halfway through. You have...
I think a lot of people were hashtag all out before that even.
No, but I just... You only have two losses. It is what it is.
What a weak crowd on Friday. 28,000. It felt like more.
It definitely was more. I don't know what happened there.
Maybe it was more, but that number is very weak. So I think more people are already... Hashtag all out.
Trey, we're growing from this.
Yeah, let's close this. I hope we do. I don't feel like we're growing.
ECU, brother. It's so painful. Let's move on. ECU.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, ECU. I don't like it one bit. Saturday night. In Greenville. I think it's their homecoming. They've had some really good crowds this year. The line opened at 4.5 in favor of East Carolina. I think it's bumped up a little bit to 5 now. It's still at 4.5 on FanDuel. Over under 58.5. I don't know, man. I don't like it. I don't feel good after Friday. If the game had ended at the 5-minute mark in the fourth quarter Friday, I'd feel awesome about going into this game. I picked it as a loss in the season preview, and that was after a prediction of a big Friday night win over a Houston team. And I don't know. Obviously, it's one of two ways, right? They either rally together, learn from it, like you said, grow and come out firing on all cylinders, or that could be the kind of loss that just like kills the season. Yeah. And right now I kind of feel like it's the kind of loss that it's going to be hard to come back from.
I don't know. I'm going to hit you with the opposite view. It's not that I don't feel good about it. I don't feel bad about it. For the most part, I think that Barnes has done a good job defensively scheming against the last couple of teams we've played. And, you know, even the Houston game, whatever scheme they decided to run on defense, I think it was shutting down the run, was great. You know, if you're going to let Toon beat you, it kind of is what it is. Force him to throw it downfield. You're looking for the turnovers anyway. The plan worked. I don't think anyone can argue that the game plans haven't been working on defense. So I feel good about, you know, stopping their running game, slowing down Holt Naylor's, and just kind of maintaining him. Like, I feel good about that. And good meaning is like,
Sam,
I don't think they're gonna blow us out by any means. What was the spread? You said 4.5. I don't think it's gonna be anything crazy like that. Like, what was the final on the Tulane EC? Was it like 20-something to 9?
24-9.
I don't think that's going to be the reverse. I don't think it's going to be ECU 24 and Memphis 9. I definitely don't think it's anything like that. They're beatable. I don't think they're that great on offense. I mean, you kind of stop them on third down. Go back to this, whatever this third down defense that we've somehow picked up, just keep that going. And I think we're fine. I mean, that's what killed us last year.
Yeah, they had 20. We forced them into 26 third downs last year, and they converted 18 of them. Freaking Holt Naylor's was Tebow light.
And what's frustrating about him is he's not a runner. And if you just look at his stats, he's like Seth. He runs it when he needs to, and there may be some design runs in there, but he only averages 6 carries a game. I mean, that's not volume of like a running quarterback. It's volume for a guy who is smart and knows how to grab the yardage.
Yeah, he's got less than 100 yards in the year, 36 carries, 2.7 yards a carry. The longest run is 20 yards, 1 touchdown on the ground. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, we've talked about this in previous episodes. Our run defense, statistically at least, has been very good. I mean, we held Houston to below 100 yards rushing the other night. I'm kind of worried about Keaton Mitchell. They got a speedster at running back. He, 56 yards, 56 attempts, 433 yards, 7.7 yards a carry. A long 81. He's a freaking speedster. This dude make one cut and he's in the open field and he's gone.
Yeah, he's definitely good.
I worry about those speed guys. You know, I don't feel like we've got a ton of speed on the defensive side of the football. So, anybody that can get into space and is gone worries me.
No, I think you have a good argument there. I will say that a lot of his damage was done against Old Dominion and Campbell, which are not exactly your annual powerhouses. Against NC State, he had 10 carries for 36 yards. Navy was shut down. He had 5 carries, 5 yards. Didn't play against South Florida. And then Tulane in the membrane, he put up 10 carries for 47 yards. All that to say, I'm not taking away. I think Keaton Mitchell is really good. I want to say he got hurt against us last year. I could be confusing with someone else, but I know he had a good game. And I think he got hurt and went out. But he is good. He definitely has the ability to put up a ton of yardage, to your point, and make some of those big, big long runs.
Yeah, besides Keaton, I'll tell you another. So they've got the third leading receiver in the conference in Isaiah Winstead. Big target for them. They love throwing him the ball. He's got double the amount of receptions as anybody else on the team. 6'4", so a bigger bodied wide receiver. 565 yards, 2 touchdowns. But this CJ, I was watching some ECU earlier, and specifically in the South Florida game. Now, obviously, I don't think South Florida's that great of a football team. They were coming off, this is a week of Hurricane Ian. They'd been displaced out of their hometown of Tampa. So maybe that plays a role, but my dude went off on South Florida and looked good. 7 catches, 200 yards, 4 touchdowns. Kind of worries me. Another bigger bodied, 6'2", 220. So maybe 2 wideouts we need to keep an eye on that Ehlers could maybe get the ball to. But their offense seems capable. I'm not terribly worried about their defense or the defensive side for them. But I think they're going to be able to move the ball on us.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on CJ Johnson. Just that the 6'2", 220, that's just a big guy. I mean, we're obviously, I'm not going to take this with a grain of salt. He's obviously not Julio Jones, but you're getting into that type of guy who is tall and just, they're kind of a brick house. It's even like Rock Taylor, honestly. If you've seen Rock is 6'2", 6'3", and he's very...
Rock's a rock.
Yeah, Rock is very muscular for a wide receiver. He's very bulky for that kind of guy, and that's kind of what CJ is. And he it creates a big matchup there, especially with some of our smaller corners. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. And I also think it's funny, is there a rule about having the name C. Johnson and having to wear the number 5? That is
and
what...
play at East Carolina?
Yeah, that's the rule, because... Chris Johnson, remember the running back? He also wore number 5.
Speaking of, when he was at the Pirates got a little bit of that smash and dash that the Titans had in 2010 going on when they had Chris Johnson and who's the other dude?
In 2010?
Yeah, when they had smash and dash, man. I know you're a Vikings fan, but...
You got me. When you say that, I'm thinking... Lindell White and Reggie Bush. I'm not thinking of ECU football.
It wasn't ECU, it was the Titans.
Oh, I was definitely not understanding that one. No, that was Lindell. It's still Lindell. How funny.
Yeah. Chris Johnson and Lindell White, the smash and dash. ECU's got a little bit of that this year with Keaton being the speed and Rajah Harris being the power. They go to Rajah with the inside the red zone. I think he's got 5 rushing touchdowns, and he does lead the team in attempts. Harris does, but Keaton Mitchell's the speed guy. TJ, I hate to bring this up, but they've got a tight end they like to use.
Hey.
6'3", 250.
You know, I like big tight ends. The tight end.
And you cannot lie. Exactly. But that, are you worried about that?
Yeah, of course. Ryan Jones is a former Oklahoma linebacker, as weird as that sounds. He was a 4-star athlete coming out of North Carolina. Played linebacker at Oklahoma for a couple of years. Kind of wanted to play offense. Took the shot, transferred to ECU, and has been there for 2 years now. And he actually had a pretty good year last year, and he's kind of off to a hot start this year. He does remind me of Sean Dykes with some ass. What I mean? What I mean? What? Yeah, Sean Dykes with some ass. Because imagine Dykes' versatility, but he's like 30 pounds heavier. They'll line him up on the line. They put him in the slot. They put him in the backfield. Like
so, like a thick Sean like Dykes. A
thick Sean Dykes.
Okay. I just wasn't anticipating hearing that come out.
I know you weren't. I saw you your reaction on the video, so I started laughing. But no, he's good, and they move him everywhere. He is their third leading receiver. He's got 250 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean that between him, I think he is 6'3". What did we say that Isaiah Winstead was 6'4"? And then CJ Johnson 6'2". Yeah. I mean that's
6'2".
Those are three very big bodies. Once you get down in the red zone, if they're not going to run it, you have to then watch for one of those three guys. And it's just it's to become kind of a nightmare down there.
I think they really like to go to Ryan Jones in the red zone. He scored in every game except for against Tulane last week.
Yeah. So it's just little stuff like that. You know, I think it's another mismatch for us. So I'm curious to see how we handle that.
So offensively, East Carolina, what's your matchup to watch for?
When you say offensively, I just want to make sure I'm following you here. Their offense, our defense.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is trying to maintain those big-bodied receivers we were just talking about. You know, with our smaller corners, they like to air it out. You know, they put up 300 yards a game through the air, so they're they're a big offense, 20th in the nation at 475 yards per game. So, you know, if you want a reference point, Memphis is at 410. So there's not a huge gap there, but for a team that likes to air it out, they have big receivers, we have small corners. You really just kind of have to win the hustle battle there and hopefully you get a couple turnovers because the physicality of it does not match up well for you.
I mean, you got to get to Ehlers too, right? Like,
yeah, oh yeah.
And not just get to him. When we get back there, you got to freaking bring him down. We got 8 sacks on the season, but I feel like we're getting back there and we're just not bringing guys down. And so they're able to throw the ball away or they make some kind of play. And I feel like that's exactly what was happening last year in this East Carolina game. It's like, Ehlers just kept making plays, and most of them were on third downs, whether that was him taking off and scrambling to get it, you know, us forcing him out of the pocket or whatever. But, we got to get to him.
Yeah, if you watch the Navy-ECU game, they weren't back there sacking away on Ehlers. I think they only came away with, I think maybe 1 sack in that game, but they were just constantly pressuring him. And you kind of keep him on his toes. He's like any quarterback. He's human. And just kind of keep him on the run and force him to make some throws he's uncomfortable with making. And I think that's kind of the tool to success there.
Yeah. I'm going with our, this is going to be a test for our run defense. I think they got a pretty good,
it's a good one.
Couple of running backs. We've been talking about, you know, whether or not we're actually good against the run. I think this will be an opportunity for us to prove that we are and slow down their rushing attack. So I'm going to be watching to see what we're able to do against Keaton Mitchell and if we're able to kind of slow I'll feel a lot better coming out of this if we can slow him down, a guy as shifty and as quick as he is.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick.
All right, looking at them defensively, I don't feel like they have anybody that necessarily sticks out on the defensive side of the ball, but man, they don't give up a whole lot of points defensively. So we talked about it in the Houston recap. This is a game where you got to finish drives off, right? So whatever, you get inside the 20, Ryan Glover read options, do whatever. I mean, you got to get tutties. This isn't one where, the rest of the year, honestly, I'm going to be talking about it now, but like you got to finish drives off in this game.
No,
I think what they're giving up 21 points a game, which is good for,
it's like 40th, 41st.
Yeah, 40th, and I think second. They're tied with Cincinnati in scoring defense. They're tied in a three-way with Navy and Cincinnati at 21 points a game.
Yeah, that's stingy. It's Memphis is definitely going to have to score more points than that if they want to win. I think, you know, I don't think we're saying anything crazy there. But, yeah, they run like a 4-2-5, 3-3-5. You know, they kind of have a Jalen Allen type of guy in Jeremy Lewis. He drops his hand, and then he kind of floats like Jalen does on any given play. So they move him about freely. So they're not too different than we are and from a defensive standpoint. But one thing they do have is three safeties, Stringer, Wood, and Wilkes, and they're good, and they're not afraid to tackle. I think they are going to be kind of the players I would watch out for. They're definitely the difference makers, I would say, on that defense because they're bigger. You know, they're all mostly 6'2"-ish. So, you know, you're kind of taking away some of the size mismatch that we have in a couple of positions. You know, I would love for Gramsci to go four wide. And when I say four wide, I don't mean just like four guys out there. I mean like really wide. Like put your wide receivers on the hash.
Spread them the heck out.
Yeah, super spread them out. Clean up the box for Seth. That way he can get an easy look at, you know, how many are inside versus how many are outside. You got the RPO stuff. You got, you know, R5 offensive linemen versus, you know, depending on what kind of front they're in, 4D line and a linebacker. You know, if they don't respect the wide plays, then get the ball outside and, you know, kind of win the numbers battle there. You have all of the opportunity on offense to take advantage of what they're putting out there. But I am slightly worried that we're just going to try to run it after we just had a week of beautiful spread offense. So it's just we'll see, right?
Have faith. They've opened it up. We're going to sling the thing. I mean, watching some ECU highlights and film, they do have a tendency to give up some long balls, some big pass plays. I mean, this is definitely Gabe has shown it. Joe, for heaven's sakes, if he can hold on to the football or find it in the sky, you know, these could be opportunities for them to use their speed to bust out a couple big receptions or long tutties. But it'll be interesting. I'm like I said, I'm worried about the night atmosphere at ECU homecoming game. Weird things happen, feels like, but. We'll see.
To your point about big plays, that was essentially how Tulane took them out pretty quickly. I mean, they had 8 plays over 15 yards, and that's a 46-yard pass, a 44-yard pass, a 35-yard pass. I mean, some pretty big passes. So it's not like they're running a no-fly zone type of situation with all those DBs back there. Right. So you there's tons of opportunity to kind of blow them up and – you know, and some of those plays were not stupid Michael Pratt. You know, some of that was Kai Horton kind of coming in and kind of keeping his leg fresh and letting him make some plays there as well. Getting beat by the second and third string quarterback. What are we talking about? So that's about to sling it. I have faith.
I feel like we're just so evenly matched.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
FPI gives them a 55% chance of winning. And I really think it's going to come down to like protecting the football and little things. I mean, we've talked about it. It sounds cliche, but one thing to note, their kicker, you're talking about finishing drives. they may be going for it on fourth down. They've already gone for it quite a bit. I think they've gone for it 18 times. Is that right? On fourth down this season already? Hmm. 14. They're 9 of 14, so 64% on fourth down. But their kicker, he has missed 5 extra points already, which seems like a lot. And he is 5 of 8 on field goals. He's missed – obviously, he missed the 2 crucial kicks in the NC State game where they obviously should have won. Yeah. He missed the PAT to tie it and then missed the game winner. And then he missed like a 40-yarder in overtime to extend it to a second overtime against Navy. And I think he's obviously missed maybe one more. But beyond 30 yards, he's 1 of 4 on the year. So something to keep an eye out for. If they get into field goal range, they may just be going for it.
Yeah. Could you imagine being 80% on PATs?
On extra points?
Yikes.
Yeah, that seems wild. I can't imagine missing five extra points. Much less one. I mean, I know Chris missed one, but five. Five through what? They've played five games or six. He's been nearly missing one a game. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, especially with as close as we have played them the last year, I think, to your point, kicking is going to come down to be a pretty crucial part of the game. So hopefully they can keep shanking them, my guy.
We'll see. We'll see. All right, let's jump into the superlatives. We hey, last week, though, not to go back to last week, but BT first, Tutty, I got it, and Quindell got a pick. Hopefully Quindell's back, by the way. He was hurt.
Yeah. They, you know, day to day.
Day to day. Everybody's day to day.
Everybody's day to day.
All right. Give me your first Tutty.
I'm going to go to Gabe. He seems to be, you know, we just briefly talked about big plays. And I think Gabe has shown that he could be the big play guy. I will say it was tough for me to not say Asa Martin, who's also been blowing up some big plays lately as well. But I'm going to stick with Gabe. He's kind of got the odd hand. I'm going to say Gabe is our first touchdown.
I'm glad you took Gabe because I was thinking Asa. And I'm going to go with Asa first, Teddy.
That's fair. Great minds think alike.
Thank you, Bust One. All right, give me your offensive game ball.
I'm going to go with Caden Priestcorn, and I think they're going to probably put Julius Wood on him. And, you know, although Wood is talented and 6'2", you know, there's about a 4-inch and 40-pound difference there. And Caden should be able to win that physical battle. And I think he is going to be our lifeline on a lot of those drives where we're trying to extend the drive and kind of keep going on third down and kind of keep things going. So Caden's definitely going to be my life support there.
I like that a lot. I like it. I'll stick with Asa. First Tutty and game ball. Big game at Asa on Saturday. So let's go. Asa gets two touchdowns. First one and last one. That's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I like it. You're one touchdown away from their allotted points. So let's go for it.
All right, what about defensive game ball?
You know, at this point, yeah, it's a 33% chance on who you take in terms of Quindell, Jalen, or
Zay.
So I'm going to go with Quindell listed as day-to-day. That kind of scares me a bit. But I will say he plays, but I think I'm going to go a different route, and I'm going to give the game ball to a new face. I'm going to say Josh Hastings. Because ECU likes to air it out, and Hastings dropped what would have been a pretty crucial interception in the last game, and I really want him to bounce back.
Game sealing.
I know, interception. And I'm gonna put faith in him. And when he listens to this, he's gonna tweet me, send me a little DM, and say I appreciate the faith, bro. And I think he has a good game against ECU. Where you at?
Shout out all the good vibes. I'm gonna go Tyler Murray. Let me get a Tyler Murray game ball.
We need it.
Need all TM to step up in Greenville on a spooky Saturday night in October. Maybe give me a fumble recovery. He had a pick 2 weeks ago. Let me get a fumble recovery, scoop and score out of Tyler.
Sign me up.
All right. Time for score prediction. I've kind of talked myself the other way, to be honest. We'll see what I go with, though.
You go first, because I'm teetering.
I wasn't anticipating going first. I picked this as a loss in the season preview. And I'm still pretty down about Friday night. And we've been bad on the road, minus the Navy game. I just don't like it. I still don't feel good about Friday. I think ECU does pull it out. I'm going to go 27-24 East Carolina.
That's fair. I don't remember exactly if I picked this as a loss or not, because I remember there was a, I picked us going 2-1 between Houston, ECU, and Tulane. And I don't remember exactly how I had the ball
bounce.
You bouncing.
Picked a Houston loss in the season preview.
Okay, that's so. This I have as a win. I think that, and I kind of feel good about that, mostly because I don't think ECU is that great. I think they just came off a hard-fought loss to Tulane where they kind of took some shots. Memphis needs the win, and I think the guys are going to be there to kind of fight that one out. You said 27-24?
Yeah, but I might change it. I'm just thinking about Navy winning at ECU, and it's like, if that Navy team can win there.
Yeah, and they're atrocious.
Why not us?
Why not us?
Although they obliterated Tulsa this weekend.
I will say...
Navy's figuring it out.
What was the under, or the over? What was that? The,
it's 58. It's 58 and a half.
Okay. I definitely think it's going to be under 58. So I'm trying to do the math. I will say ECU 24, Memphis 31.
TJ has faith.
That's probably too high scoring, honestly.
Are you changing?
No, I'll leave it there. Whatever. I do think that's too high.
31-24?
Yeah.
Am I going to stick with it? Am I sticking with it? I can't pick against them. I'm changing it. 28-24, Tiggs. I changed it.
You changed to...
we're winning. We learned from it. Learned from our mistakes and learned from what we did well. And we're going to come out. We're going to beat ECU on homecoming. 28-24 Tigers.
All right, cool. I'm glad you changed it because I'm changing mine too. I'm going to say Memphis 24, ECU 17. I think it's kind of going to be a low scoring game. I think.
Big Tiger D.
Big Tiger D, man. I think that they will kind of figure it out and you'll have two teams kind of control the clock.
We gave Dana that Big Tiger D for 3.5 quarters. We'd only given up 14 points. You kidding me?
That'd been nice. I just saw the way that Tulane was able to handle them. Held them to only 9 points. Like, what are we talking about, Tulane?
Yeah, we can't lose. I'm going to be in Disney World, the happiest place on earth, for this game. And I cannot, if we lose, it's going to ruin the entire family trip. Like, we have, there's no option but for us to win. I don't care how we win. We could win 3-2. We kick a field goal and they have a safety. I don't care. But we better win or my Disney trip is going to be ruined. Next week's episode, by the way, is going to be coming to you guys live from Disney World. Well, at least half of it.
Part of it, yeah.
My portion.
I'll still be in Memphis. All right, Trey. You settling? You're done? No more score changing?
We are not changing. I mean, I might change between now and the time that I have to submit my score for the Pick'em Pot, but for this podcast, I'm sticking with 28-24 Tigers.
Perfect. All right, let's jump to this goofy can.
Don't care for the can. It's very plain.
You guys can't see it.
It has the crest on it. It's got blue and white checkerboard. It kind of feels Kentucky-ish, so now I'm hating it even more.
It's just weird. I don't even understand what the checkerboard... I mean, is this someone's flag? Yeah, it does, like, what are we doing here?
It doesn't feel German. It does not feel German at all. I guess those dragons, but dragons aren't German, are they? That's like a Chinese thing, right?
Well, I think that's probably some crest and that we're just being dumb and don't know what that is. But
yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's what it is. Like I said, it looks like a soccer jersey almost, but the checkerboard is making me think of Kentucky football and like their basketball court. I don't like it. I'm going like 4-3 on the can.
It's
very plain.
Yeah, that's probably pretty good. I was going to go a little lower. Maybe a 3.9. I think it just actually pisses me off and it makes me like the beer less.
Why is it pissing you off?
I don't know. It's something about, maybe it's the checkerboards. I don't know.
It doesn't even, I think it's also blue. What does it have to, it doesn't feel Oktoberfest at all. The other ones were at least like festive.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. They're normally pretty good with their cans and they've done a lot of rebranding.
Gave you a Oktoberfest feeling. This does not feel that way.
It doesn't. I wish they would explain themselves. Kind of.
It's kind of like a medieval vibe, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're getting that from the little lion hands thing.
It's like a Knight's Tale. What a good movie.
All right.
R.I.P. Heath Ledger.
Trey, I'm going to say I've done some research since we've been on the call. And I think that we're dumb.
Probably.
Because I found another can that looks pretty much like a straight up copyright of what we're looking at here. And I think Ghost River may be in some legal issues over this can.
Well, it depends on who did it first.
I mean, I couldn't even tell you who made this beer. But
I'm seeing a lot of blue. Okay.
Yeah, we're missing something, I think. So yeah. I'm seeing a lot of the blue and white checkered fest. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe it's the flag of physically of Oktoberfest in Germany, in Deutschland.
Yeah, it seems to be a very common theme.
All right. Anyone listening to this?
Well, hey, we wouldn't have known that from the first two. Where it had nothing to do with that.
Hey, you know what?
Also, I will say, if you're looking, the checkered of blue and white is much more like light blue. This is very dark Kentucky blue. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think
it's not the right blue.
Is this?
If they'd had the right blue, we'd have known what it meant.
I don't know if that's true. This is the Bavarian flag is what I'm taking away from this. So apologize. Mm. We need to apologize to all of our Bavarian listeners out there. We were kidding.
We are international here at Tigers on Tap. So yes, to our Bavarian brothers, we do apologize for not recognizing your flag.
All right. I said 4.1. I'm going to bump it up. I'm going to say...
You said 3.9.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm going to say 4.7 because I feel like an idiot. So I'm going to give a little juice and say it does match what they're trying to do. It does do that. I just still don't like it.
Yeah. I'm sticking with mine because, I still don't... it's not doing anything for me.
It's been a lot of time talking about the can. What about the beer itself? The actual liquid?
It was very malty, very malt forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It wasn't bad. I think the other two we've had so far were better.
Oh yeah.
But they weren't like head and shoulders better. I'm going to go like 7.6 on the beer. It was good. It was fine.
You liked it better than I did. I'm going to go 6.3. I think it's fine. I don't know if I'd want two of them. Very malty. And like
I feel like we need to be drinking these out of Das Boot.
Or like a Stein.
Yeah. Stein, Lichtenstein.
Yeah, we're just doing it wrong, I think is what it is. All right.
Well, next week we'll have to be better.
Oh, well, you'll be in Disney.
Yeah, but I could be real pissed off in Disney, and that's not a place you want to be when you're pissed off.
You can go to Epcot and drink literally this beer at Epcot.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is the Food and Wine Festival, so it should be a good time. Hopefully the Tigs pull out a win, and I'm happy in the happiest place on earth. For TJ, this is Trey. We're out of here. Bring a cold beer, stay for the hot takes. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Tigers on Tap. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and a comment wherever you listen to your podcast. If you are interested in content all about the University of Memphis Tiger Athletic Program, hop over to www.gotigers247.com. New articles are published daily, and you can join the Go Tigers 247 family by signing up for VIP.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.